Blog Talk Radio.
To 69,462,
or 58.9% to 39.7%. Taxpayers should not be responsible for paying the debts of a private institution, said Signora Anderson, a spokeswoman for the advice group that opposed the bailout. A similar referendum in 2009 on the issue, though with harsher terms, found 93.2% of the Icelandic electorate rejecting a proposal to guarantee the deposits of foreign investors who had funds in the Icelandic bank. The referendum was invoked when President Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson vetoed legislation the Althingi, Iceland's parliament, had passed to pay back the British and Dutch. Under the terms of the agreement, Iceland would have had to pay $2.35 billion to the UK and $1.32 billion to the Netherlands by 2046 at a 3% interest rate. Its rejection for the second time by Iceland is a testament to its people, who feel they should be in no responsibility for the loss of foreigners endured in the financial crisis. The opposition to bailouts led to Iceland's discussion to allow the bank to fail in 2008. Not that the taxpayers there could have afforded to, as noted by Bloomberg News at the time the crisis hit. The banks had debts equal to 10 times Iceland's $12 billion GDP. These were private banks, and we didn't pump money into them in order to keep them going. The state did not shoulder the responsibility of failed private banks, Iceland's president, Ólafur Grímsson, told Bloomberg Television. The voters' rejection came despite threats to isolate Iceland from funding in international financial institutions. Iceland's national debt has already been downgraded by credit rating agencies, and now those same agencies have promised to do so once again as punishment for defying the will of international bankers. This is just the latest in the long drama since 2008 of global institutions refusing to take losses in the financial crises. Threats of global economic depression and claims of being too big to fail have equated to a loaded gun to the heads of representative governments in the U.S. and Europe. Iceland is of particular interest because it did not bail out its banks like Ireland did or foreign ones like the U.S. did. If that fervor catches on amongst taxpayers worldwide, as it has in Iceland with the Tea Party movement in America, the banks would have something to fear. That is, the inability to draw from limitless amounts of funding from gullible government officials and central banks. It appears that the root cause is government guarantees, which, whether explicit or implicit, on risk-taking by the banks.
Ultimately, such guarantees are not to maintain full employment or even prop up an economy with growth. They are simply designed to allow these international institutions to over-leverage and increase their profit margins in good times and to avoid catastrophic losses in bad times. The lesson here is instructive across the pond, but it is a chilling one. If the U.S., or any sovereign for that matter, attempts to restructure their debts or to force private investors to take a haircut to their foolish gambles, these international institutions are promised the equivalent of economic war in response. However, the alternative is for representative governments to sacrifice their independence to a cadre of faceless bankers who share no allegiance to any nation. It is the conflict that has already defined the beginning of the 21st century. The question is whether free people will choose to remain free, as Iceland has, or to submit. And that was by Bill Wilson.
I give Iceland a lot of credit.
The president of Americans for Limited Government. Pretty cool guy. Okay.
And that's what Greece should do.
Yep. Absolutely. He was determined to postpone the Greek default until taxpayers have assumed the bank's liability.
Yeah, it's the same thing. They just want
the private banks to
be bailed out.
Is the massive Puerto Rican trench awakening? Oh.
What is that?
That's a fault line, I guess. The Puerto Rico Trench. Hey, boy. Let's take a look at this one. Yeah. a massive Puerto Rico trench
awakening.
What Puerto Rico trench, exactly? The arrows in the map above show
which
the direction.
Which you can't see.
Yeah, show the tectonic plates are moving with the resultant buildup of pressure releasing into a pyramid of earthquakes in the region over the years. Puerto Rico is a smaller green island in the middle of earthquakes in the region over the years. Puerto Rico is a smaller green island in the middle with Dominican Republic, the larger island on the left, and
the string of other Caribbean islands is buried
under the earthquake markers that flow down the page to the lower right.
Okay.
There. And you can see the Puerto Rico trench. It is the biggest and deepest such trench in the entire Atlantic Ocean. This trench is capable of producing 8.0 earthquakes and above. The risk of major quake, underwater landslide, and mega tsunami are as great as that of the Seattle area. In fact, one recent risk assessment put it at 35% to 55%. The zone hasn't ruptured in over 200 years, and that has geologists seriously concerned. In other words, something major will happen. No one knows when, but it will happen, as it has in the past there. And add to the fact that 35 million people live in surrounding low-lying areas, and you have a monumental disaster just waiting to happen. But why no warning? What struck is that everything I'm reading, it's admitted this risk is huge, but it's hardly known in the area. Even Wikipedia admits knowledge of earthquake and tsunami risk has not been widespread among general public of the islands located near the trench. Why would it negatively impact the local economy? Much like the idiot mayor development worries in the movie Jaws, are there really any people in charge? And, well, look at the Gulf oil disaster of Fukushima for SARS. I don't think the concern is anyone's health or well-being. It's preserving the status quo while the disasters are their toll as quietly as possible. Remember, it's not crisis prevention, it's crisis management.
Mm.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah. Look at this right here. I'm looking at the map here, and it's like all around the west coast. Across through
Mexico,
past Mexico, around Mexico, and shoots over Panama, and right into the Caribbean. Okay, where Puerto Rico.
Below Florida.
Yeah. So, pretty sick stuff, dude.
Yeah.
And that article goes on. I'm going to tell you where to go to get it before it's news. Okay, beforeitsnews.com. Check it out. It's called the Puerto Rican Trench.
It's a massive Puerto Rican trench awakening.
Officer trailer to eat the sun. I don't think so. Okay. Ooh. Cancer surges in body scanner operators. TSA launches cover-up.
Oh, boy.
Fearful of provoking further public resistance to naked airport body scanners, the TSA has been caught covering up a surge in cases of TSA workers developing cancer as a result of their close proximity to radiation-firing devices. Perhaps the most shocking revelation to emerge from the latest FOIA documents obtained by the Electronic Privacy Information Center. After union representatives in Boston discovered a cancer cluster amongst TSA workers linked with radiation in the body scanners, TSA sought to downplay the matter and refused to issue employees with dosimeters to measure levels of exposure. Sons of bitches, huh?
Mm-mm.
They wouldn't even give them dosimeters. Hang on a second. After union the documents indicate how a large number of workers have been falling victim to cancer, strokes, and heart disease.
Oh, dear.
The department, rather than acting on it or explaining its position, seems to have just dismissed. I don't think that's the way most other agencies would have acted in a similar situation if they were confronted with that question, said Mark Rodenberg. In a
email
sent to Heather Callahan, Deputy Federal Security Director at Boston Logan International Airport, Union representatives expressed their concern about TSA's vast and growing number of TSOs, what does that mean? I don't know. Working there, that have thus far been diagnosed with cancer.
Of course, if TSA workers who are merely standing near the scanners are already developing cancer, frequent fires are also putting themselves in harm's way by standing directly inside the radiation firing machine. As we reported yesterday, newly released government documents obtained via the Freedom of Information Act by the Electronic Privacy Information Center reveal that TSA, and specifically the head of the Department of Homeland Security, publicly mischaracterized the findings of the National Institute of Standards and Technology in stating that NIST had positively confirmed the safety of the full-body scanner in tests. In erroneously citing both NIST and the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine to claim that the body scanners are safe, the TSA also deliberately misled the public on the dangers posed by the devices.
Documents obtained by Epic, which is this website, show that far from affirming their safety, NIST warned that airport screeners should avoid standing next to full-body scanners in order to keep exposure to harmful radiation as low as reasonably achievable. Bastards, huh?
Uh-huh.
Further documentation illustrates how a Johns Hopkins study actually revealed that radiation zones around body scanners could exceed the general public dose limit, contradicting repeated claims of the TSA that Johns Hopkins had validated the safety of the devices. At the time, we pointed out that Dr. Michael Love, who runs an X-ray lab at the Department of Biophysics and Biophysical Chemistry at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, had publicly stated 2 days previously that statistically someone is going to get skin cancer from these X-rays. What do you think of that? Want to read the rest of
it? It's kind of long.
TSA
workers complained about the radiation dangers of the scanners back in December, saying they were being kept in the dark by their employers, despite repeated requests for information. We don't think the agency is sharing enough information, said Millie Rodriguez, occupational health and safety specialist at the American Federation of Government Employees, the union that represents TSA workers. A study conducted last year by David Brenner, head of Columbia University's Center for Radiological Research, found that the body scanners are likely to increase in a common type of skin cancer called basal cell carcinoma, which affects the head and the neck. Following the study, Brenner urged medical authorities to look at his work, pointing to the dangerous notion of mass scanning millions of people without proper oversight. There really is no other technology around where we're planning to X-ray such an enormous number of individuals. It's really unprecedented in the radiation world, said Brenner. Similar concerns to those explored in the Columbia University study were voiced in February 2010 by the influential Interagency Committee on Radiation Safety, who warned in a report that scanners increase the risk of cancer and birth defects and should not be used on pregnant women or children. Despite government claiming that backscatter X-ray systems produce radiation too low to pose a threat, the organization concluded in their report that the government must justify the use of the scanners and that a more accurate assessment of the health risks is needed. Pregnant women and children should not be subject to scanning, according to the report, adding that the government should consider other techniques to achieve the same end without the use of ionizing radiation. The committee cited the IAEA's 1996 Basic Safety Standard Agreement drafted over 3 decades that protects people from radiation. Frequent exposure to low doses of radiation can lead to cancer and birth defects. In a recent letter to President Obama's science advisor, several University of California professors also complained of how there is still no rigorous hard data for the safety of X-ray airport passenger scanners. The scientists noted that the safety tests for the scanners were carried out exclusively by manufacturers and recommended an immediate moratorium on the use of the devices until the health risks can be independently studied.
Right.
I don't see that happening.
Well, maybe something will.
Oh, I hope so.
I mean, now that they actually know that these bastards are. I mean, who's crazy enough to work for them? You know? They know they're getting blasted.
I never worked for those bastards.
No. Does our brain really create consciousness? That's an interesting
one. Okay. I read that. Western science has had remarkable success in explaining the functioning of the material world. But when it comes to the inner world of the mind, it has very little to say. And when it comes to consciousness itself, science falls curiously silent. There is nothing in physics, chemistry, biology, or any other science that can account for over having an interior world. In a strange way, scientists would be much happier if minds did not exist. That without minds, there would be no science. And this ever-present paradox may be pushing Western science into what Thomas Kuhn called a paradigm shift and a fundamental change in worldview. We've been talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
How that's, we talk about this kind of stuff on our Friday night show all the time. And let's see. And the process begins with the prevalent paradigm encounters and anomalies. And
an observation
that the current worldview can't explain. As far as today's scientific paradigm is concerned, consciousness is certainly one big anomaly. It is the most obvious fact of life. The fact that we are aware of the experience in internal world of images, sensations, thoughts, and feelings. Yet there is nothing more difficult to explain. It is easier to explain how the universe evolved from the Big Bang to human beings than it is to explain why any of us should ever have a single inner experience. How does all that electrochemical activity in the physical matter of the brain ever give rise to conscious experience? Why doesn't it just go on in the dark? The initial response to an anomaly is often simply to ignore it. This is indeed how the scientific world has responded to the anomaly of consciousness, and for seemingly sound reasons. First, consciousness is observed, cannot be observed in the way that material objects can. It cannot be weighed, measured, or otherwise pinned down. And second, science has sought to arrive at universal objective truths that are independent of any particular observer's viewpoint or state of mind. To this end, they have deliberately avoided subjective considerations. And third, there seemed no need to consider it. The functioning of the universe could be explained without having to explore the troublesome subject of consciousness.
This is kind of a long article, Leo. Oh, it goes on and on.
I
didn't realize. Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to bookmark this so that we... I'll study this before when we talk to George.
Yeah.
Next week.
You're in tools. You don't want to be there. You want to be in bookmark.
This would be a good one.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is Activist Post. I highly recommend you go to that. And
it's just quite a long article to read today.
Yeah. So check it out. But it's very, very good. Very well written, too. I followed it. And I'll see.
Fort Calhoun Nuclear Plant main building underwater 10-mile mandatory evacuation area.
Let's see how bad that is.
Yeah. Let's listen to this video. This is from Channel 8.
When it comes to Nebraska's nuclear power plants and floodwaters, the top regulator says there's nothing to worry about. Good evening, and thanks for joining us.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission's chairman visited the Fort Calhoun nuclear plant today.
He checked out Missouri River flooding and preparations made to protect the plant. Channel 8 Eyewitness News reporter Melina Mathis has tonight's top story. Melina. The Fort Calhoun nuclear power plant, located 19 miles north of Omaha, was the second stop for Gregory Yatsko's tour. During his visit, he spoke with plant officials and resident inspectors, the personnel who work on site every day. Just 2 years ago, an NRC inspection indicated deficiencies in the flood preparation area, which has now been remedied. Yatsko says even though there was a 10-mile evacuation around the plant, there is no immediate threat to the plant's reactor.
All plants in the United States are designed generally to develop planning for the 10-mile area around the plant. And that's a really prudent approach because it's within that 10-mile area that we anticipate fast developing events would most likely lead to radiation.
In addition, Yaxco met with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and took a helicopter tour along the Missouri River to provide a complete overview of the flooding and measures being taken. Yaxco says they are doing everything necessary to protect public health and safety. The NRC doesn't anticipate any additional challenges to the plant. However, he does ensure that a large number of safety systems are in place to prevent any damage to the reactor itself.
Yeah, and I can only imagine people living around the area still very concerned. I know we're going to be talking with them tomorrow. Thanks, Melina.
Well, despite some seepage there at the plant, officials say the Fort Calhoun area there, the plant, is still safe. Today, Congressman Jeff Fortenberry got a tour. Floodwaters continue to surround Fort Calhoun's nuclear plant. OPPD says the seepage was expected and that pumps are handling the problem. Congressman Fortenberry got a ground tour and said, although it was shocking to see the devastation, he's confident there is no safety risk right now.
Have assured me that we all should have a very high level of degree of confidence that it is safe and that the redundant systems are all working well. You can never be 100% confident, and again, this is a major event with floodwaters at the door, literally, of the nuclear plant, but they've gone to great lengths to prepare for this contingency, and all is operating safely now.
An 8-foot-tall berm collapsed at the plant early Sunday. However, officials remain confident and say everything is still secure. The plant has been closed for refueling since April.
The devastation of a deadly train crash east of Reno, Nevada.
Suspenders.
Yes, as President Barack Obama threw the talks on a debt ceiling crisis into turmoil on Monday afternoon by proposing a $6 billion tax hike. $600 billion tax hike before even meeting with the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell. Just as Democrats and Republicans seem to be inching toward an agreement that would stave off the prospect of default on national debts, Obama introduced a measure that is sure to have the GOP howling in opposition and a new wrench in the works drew scorn from the conservatives. So that's nothing new.
Green stealth tax to encourage wind farms and nuclear power will hit the poor the hardest. A green stealth tax to encourage new wind farms and nuclear power plants could push tens of thousands of households into fuel poverty, but do nothing to reduce emissions. The carbon floor price announced in the March budget could even end up giving climate policies a bad name, the Institute for Public Policy Research has warned. To be introduced in 2013, the tax is intended to encourage investment in low-carbon energy and raise billions for the Treasury. Under the existing rules, energy companies must generate a fixed amount of green energy every year or else buy permits to pollute on the open market. The new tax kicks in if the cost of these permits falls too low. Form 2013, the floor price of a permit needed to admit a ton of carbon will be set at 16 pounds, rising to 30 pounds by 2020. The higher costs of electricity will be passed on to households and business customers, with energy-guzzling industries hit hardest.
Yeah, this is all happening in England, anyway.
Yeah.
Europe, but it's a pretty long article. I wanted to get to something. Do you mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to see what the last paragraph had to say.
Treasury spokesman said, without the carbon price war, supplying powers to our homes and businesses could become increasingly expensive and unreliable. It will drive between 30 and 40 billion pounds of new investment in low-income energy generation. It adds that,
someone had introduced a warm home discount scheme to help the most vulnerable with their energy bills.
They skipped the word in the sentence there. It made no sense.
So it looks like it's really going to drive up costs.
Yeah. Europe's got enough trouble. I tried doing that here now. Hey, I want to hear some crashing and cooling, a report on the Greek riots. I thought that was good.
Okay.
But, yeah. The one riots here from RT.
Purpose is
Intel Hub. They're always pretty good. Let's see. Coming. Concerned citizens for nuclear safety. An anti-nuclear watchdog group has reported that over 30,000 barrels of plutonium contaminated waste is being stored in tents, above ground near the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Can you believe that?
These barrels may be endangered due to a massive fire that has been quoted as entirely uncontained and highly unpredictable. The weather forecast for Los Alamos predicts that wind through Tuesday afternoon will be from the southeast, then switching from to the southwest at 11 to 18 miles per hour, with minimum humidities in the lower teens. That could encourage the fire to move closer to Los Alamos. This is absolutely critical information that was given
a paragraph
in the corporate-controlled media. Government officials have been quick to claim that this... I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, he's on Berkeley Water Filtration System.
Sorry.
Government officials have been quick to claim
that the situation does not pose a risk to public health, and while we all hope they are right, it is the job of the press to make sure. NBC Nightly News was one of the few newscasts to cover the fact that three nuclear power plants are currently in danger in the U.S. Caught.com has reported that a small fire was put out at the Los Alamos National Laboratory and that all radioactive materials are safe. A small fire has been... Officials have assured the public that all radioactive materials are controlled and safe, yet the weather and fire have been openly labeled highly unpredictable. The Huffington Post also covered the real dangers and noted that several metric tons of plutonium are and other hazards are currently on site.
That's okay. So we pretty much know what's going on there. And they're exposed to...
Newswatch has reported in detail the dangers that a fire possesses to Los Alamos National Laboratory. We are not so... Let's read that. That might be interesting. We are not so concerned about the hardened facilities at the lab constructed of concrete and cleared of combustible materials like trees and bushes around the perimeters. We doubt that there would be any breach to their containment, that it would let contaminants escape. But we do have concerns. One is the fact that over six decades, the lab has blown up a lot of uranium and depleted uranium in dynamic, high-explosive experiments in the general area in the front of the fire. We don't know to what extent the shrapnel or debris has been cleaned up and could possibly be aerosolized.
Oh, my God.
Another concern, given both the velocity and ferocity of the lost conscious fire, is whether any lab facilities lose their power and backup generators fail to work for whatever reason. In the case, contaminant systems could fail with unknown safety implications.
But our biggest concern is whether the fire could reach the fabric building, buildings, essentially very large tents, at Technical Area 54's Area G that stores some 20,000 barrels of plutonium, contaminated waste from nuclear weapons research and production. We recommend that the public use satellite-based fire detection data and fire intelligence information published by the U.S. Forest Service to monitor the situation. For that, we can see that the leading edge of the fire is a little more than 3 miles from Area G.
Wow.
Jesus, that's getting close.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's
I don't know. I don't think I can contain this thing. Jesus. Yeah.
Criminalized war. Malaysia calls for Israeli leaders to be prosecuted. Let's read. Let's have that from Press TV.
Many feel that the Malaysian authorities reflect what people are saying on the street closer than most other governments. And on Tuesday, they held a conference in London to reflect ordinary people's anger over the waging of war by the rich on the poor. This conference has been organized with one central message: to criminalize war and to hold those who wage it to account.
And of course, this message is particularly poignant in the light of recent events in Gaza, where Palestinian civilians were massacred with virtual impunity. Speakers at the conference said that Israel's war on Gaza was a classic example of the rich and the powerful crushing the weak and defenseless. Over 1,300 Palestinians, mostly civilians, were killed. Israel said it was targeting Hamas fighters who were firing rockets into its territory. But the Malaysian foreign minister called for an international war crimes tribunal to be set up to prosecute Israeli leaders.
We drag a person to court to be prosecuted for his act of having killed someone. We use the maxim mens rea in determining his murderous intent. But we simply allow a neighboring state to marauder thousands with guns, airstrikers, chemicals, and tanks.
Meanwhile, one of Asia's best-known statesmen, ex-Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, castigated the US and Britain for supporting Israel with money and arms. Earlier, he told me that new US President Barack Obama would be unable to solve the Middle East conflict.
I feel that his hands are tied. Most American presidents, and I would say including Obama, may not take any stand against Israel without losing considerable support in the U.S. itself. The Israeli lobby in the U.S. is truly powerful, and they can determine who wins and who loses in elections.
Do you believe that Israel will exist in 30 years' time?
Well, it should exist in some form or another, but not in such a way that it occupies Palestinian land, it keeps on threatening Palestinians, it tries to out-terrorize the Palestinians. That will not happen.
The feeling among conference delegates was that the world order, which overwhelmingly favors the rich Western nations, has to change. A more equitable world, they argued, would lead to more peace and more justice. Roshan Mohammed Saleh, Press TV, London.
What do you think of that, folks? So, that is good, good news. What the Fukushima is going on in Oklahoma? In Omaha.
Omaha.
Yeah.
That's a catchy title.
Yeah. Not as catchy as my Fukushima, though.
Uh-huh.
That was my great chapter. Okay, in the immediate aftermath of Fukushima nuclear disaster, Japanese officials assured everyone that everything was all right, everything was under control, that the problem was limited and controllable. It took a few days for that lie to fall apart. This time, it may be our own turn. Something bad is happening in Nebraska. A state of emergency was declared for two countries. Where nuclear plants are located. One of the Fort Calhoun, and the other in the Cooper Nuclear Station near Brownsville. Due to flooding from the Missouri River, some kind of emergency event is happening or about to happen here. The government is telling us not to worry, but there are just some precautionary measures going on to prevent a disaster from happening because of the flooding. I don't know, you want to read more of that, or you want
to... No, I'd like to go to... We've read a lot on that.
We covered that.
The true story of SV40, the cancer-causing virus hidden in polio vaccines. Poliomyelitis, or polio for short, is a disease that has been around since ancient times, and despite the medical advances we have made in the United States in terms of regular and natural health, there is still no cure for this dreaded disabling disease. An infectious viral affliction that attacks nerve cells and at times the body's central nervous system, polio causes a phenomenon known as muscle wasting, a decrease in the mass of muscle, and could also cause paralysis and death. Since the 1900s, there's been cycles of epidemics, each seeming to get stronger and more disastrous. The disease, whose early symptoms are like the flu, struck mostly children, though adults, including Franklin Roosevelt, caught it too, said a report in the journal A Science Odyssey. In 1952, that all changed when Dr. Jonas Salk, a medical student and virus researcher, developed a vaccine against polio that 2 years later was accepted for testing nationwide. The principle behind the vaccine was simple, and familiar, like the vaccine that has been developed to fight smallpox. The polio vaccine introduced a small amount of the virus into the body, which then developed antibodies and an ability to fight off more powerful strains of the disease. Admittedly, Salk's vaccine logged early success. Some 60 to 70% of those vaccinated did not develop the disease. But it also saw some early problems. About 200 people who had been vaccinated got the disease. 11 of them died, forcing them to halt all testing. Once it was determined that a faulty, poorly manufactured batch of the disease of the vaccine was the cause of those cases, stricter production standards were implemented and full-scale vaccinations nationwide resumed once more. 4 million vaccines were given by 1955. By 1959, 90 countries were using it. That said, those early cases were far from the last time the vaccine killed. In fact, throughout its history of the use, Salk's polio vaccine left a path of death in its wake.
You want to go through the whole thing. I would refer you to this article on naturalnews.com.
Yes.
All right, the true story of the polio vaccine, SV40.
And it's important to hear what's hidden in that vaccine. There's some cancer-causing viruses.
Yeah, I'll help you try it out. And this thing is really, this is pretty scary. One more thing on nuclear reactors here, but Japan's most dangerous reactor, severely damaged, could become worse than Fukushima. If you have been following the events surrounding the unfolding Fukushima Daiichi nuclear catastrophe here on Natural News over the past several months, you have already likely aware that it is now considered by some of the worst industrial disaster the world has ever seen, and one that will continue to worsen in the coming months and years ahead. However, according to the recent New York Times article, another severely damaged nuclear plant 300 miles from Fukushima could supersede it should current efforts there to fix a major accident fail. The Manju prototype fast breeder reactor, located directly over an earthquake fault line near Tsuruga, Japan, lies on the opposite coast of Japan's crippled Fukushima plant. Last August, the 3.3-ton fuel relay device broke and fell off into the reactor's inner core, which severed access to its plutonium and uranium fuel rods. And experts have repeatedly tried to remove the device and fix the damage, but all efforts have failed so far. This is sad. The Israeli troops uproot 300 olive trees and self-hit. Today, June 28th, the Israeli occupation forces uprooted 300 olive trees in the Palestinian village of Esther in the self-hit district of the West Bank. This is just utter cruelty, you know, utter stupid cruelty. Destroying a person's livelihood, you know, destroying olive trees.
Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative said the destruction of lands and uprooting hundreds of olive trees in Deir Ester are heinous crimes against the land and its citizens. Bag Hustifi said that bulldozing 300 olive trees is part of the Israeli government's intention to expand settlements in the West Bank, noting that the olive trees are a vital source of livelihood for the families in the West Bank. Bag Huti condemned the crimes and calls for the resilience of the people against the devastating occupation of the Palestinian land.
Oh, God.
It's just not right.
These people are just ruthless.
Barghouti added that the crimes committed by Netanyahu's administration against the Palestinian people and the land cannot be tolerated. It is time to stop such attacks and to confront the international community's complicity, which has allowed Israeli crimes to continue with impunity. Observing that Netanyahu's administration appears to be racing against time to impose facts on the ground, Bakhuti asserted that Israel's apartheid system has exceeded that which was in place in South Africa. Bakhuti praised the villages of Deir Istia for their steadfast resistance. The people must confront the occupation and its projects through an escalation of popular resistance.
God bless the Palestinian people. I hope they get these bastards. I really do. Oh, God. We got about 10 minutes left here. Let's see if I can find something really exciting. Lagarde was named first female IMF chief. No wonder she's going to be the start molesting butlers instead of maids. The executive board of the International Monetary Fund today selected Christine Lagarde to serve as IMF managing director and Madam Chairman of the executive board for a five-year term starting in July 5th, 2011, the IMF said in a statement. French minister, she looks kind
of... She's French.
She looks kind of vampire-ish, though, doesn't she?
She's very masculine-looking.
French finance minister replaces Strauss-Kahn, who resigned on May 18th over charges of sexually assaulting a hotel maid in New York. New York.
Police face trial over Katrina shooting. Okay, Saudi forces to pull out of Bahrain. NATO drops uranium bombs on Libya. How nice.
We played that last night.
Yeah.
There was one, though.
That's not the last one.
No, I wanted to go to... I wanted to play this one out tonight, and this is from Jimbo Simmons, who is an American Indian activist who was on the boat to Gaza, all right, with Gail Thompson and the others. You want to see this?
Yep.
It's very good. It's very good. And
let's play that.
Also, I just wanted to mention, in case we don't have time, Tom Petty says to Michelle Bachmann, "Stop playing American Girl." Right, and he sent her a cease and desist letter.
Good for him.
So, you know, he didn't want her playing
his music to support that horrible cause.
To support her, right, which is really quite smart. So here we go. I'm going to give
you... Thank you, Tom.
I want you to... Tonight we're going to go out with Jimbo Simmons on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, an interview with him. This is on Censored News Blog.
Movement and the Palestine Liberation Organization. That's how far back relationship goes. And one of the first, learning about armed struggle, liberation struggles around the world was the Palestinians for me. And later on, it became the IRA and, of course, the other liberation struggles throughout the Americas. So it's always been important for us to show that unity and solidarity and support for one another, because we feel that as oppressed peoples of the world, we share a commonality, you know, in struggle and in revolution as well. And so for us, the American Indian Movement has always stood on that side of struggle. And so we feel it's imperative for us to be here to show our respect for their struggle and for the hardships that they're going through. And on behalf of the American Indian Movement, continue on and continue on to walk, you know, in our struggle and solidarity. So it's very important for us to be here, not only for our struggle, for our movement, but it's also to send a message to our own members as well, particularly the younger generation that's coming up and that needs to know our history of struggle and our history of solidarity with other liberations around the world. I think it's important for us to show that and to be here.
You know, that's about a 10-minute interview. I suggest you go to Censored News to check it out. That's Ames President Chief Jimbo Simmons, and he's on the Gaza float the Gaza flotilla with our friend Gail, actually Gail Townsend. I think it'll be fun to end with this one tonight with Michelle Bachman on. I think there's a little video here.
I hate giving her any attention at all.
I know, but this is kind of a funny one because she says that the founding fathers where they liberated the black people in this country. It's really quite bizarre.
The founding fathers liberated the black
Michelle
people.
Michelle Bachman officially announced yesterday in Iowa that she was running. Here on Good Morning America, where George Stephanopoulos attempted to clarify some of her previous statements. Among them, Bachman claims that the founding fathers who wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence worked tirelessly to end slavery. Now, with respect, Congresswoman, that's just not true, Stephanopoulos said. Many of them, including Jefferson and Washington, were actually slaveholders, and slavery didn't end until the Civil War. And Bachman dodged the question, answering, well, you know, what's marvelous is that in this country and under our Constitution, we have the ability, when we recognize that something is wrong, to change it. And that's what we did in our country. We changed it. We no longer have slavery. That's a good thing. And what's our Constitution has done for our nation is to give us the basis of freedom unparalleled in the rest of the world. We go on to and she goes on to claim that Quincy Adams also was a small boy during the Revolutionary War and did indeed eventually work to abolish slavery, should be counted as a founding father. God almighty. Woman, it's crazy. Right.
So Sarah Palin in Iowa, President Obama in Iowa, one step ahead of him, Congresswoman Michelle Bachman, she made it official in Iowa yesterday. This morning she is in New Hampshire. Thanks for joining us, Congresswoman.
Thank you, George. It's great to be with you this morning.
In your announcement speech yesterday, you said, my voice is part of a movement to take back our country. From whom?
Well, from the people all across the nation. The voice that I learned growing up in Iowa was a very reasonable, common sense voice, and that's one that I've learned and I've taken very successfully to the halls of Congress, and now I want to take that to the White House.
You have been making a lot of progress, also getting a lot of scrutiny. I am not going to get too deep into the flake flap from Sunday, but as you make progress in this campaign, everything you say is going to get more scrutiny, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning website PolitiFact has found that you have the worst record of making false statements of any of the leading contenders. I wonder if you want to take a chance to clear up some of your past statements. For example, earlier this year, you said that the founding fathers who wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence worked tirelessly to end slavery. Now, with respect, Congresswoman, that's just not true. Many of them, including Jefferson and Washington, were actually slaveholders, and slavery didn't end until the Civil War.
But you know what's marvelous is that in this country and under our Constitution, we have the ability, when we recognize that something is wrong, to change it. And that's what we did in our country. We changed it. We no longer have slavery. That's a good thing. And what our Constitution has done for our nation is to give us a basis of freedom unparalleled in the rest of the world. That's what people want.
She's out of her freaking brains, and she's a great double speaker, isn't she?
Yeah.
My God, she just rolled right off that one like, what? I don't know. There you go. But anyway, we would have... That's Michelle Bachmann. Hey, for any of you who are Tea Party members, God bless you. But at least get your freaking history right. You know what I mean? That would help. You know? All right. So, give you some credibility. Anyway, that's our show tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining us. And we're going to let you play out here and wish you a very, very pleasant evening and see you tomorrow night.
Yes. Good night, folks.